All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Guys, we have a code red.
You mean code red the hospital emergency alert, code red the computer worm, or code red the cherry-flavored soft drink from makers of Mountain Dew?
One ring to rule them all.
One ring to find them.
Oh, Jesus.
One ring to bring them all.
And in the darkness, bind them.
Do you know what the problem is with you kids today? You guys think that all science fiction started in 1977 with Star Wars.
Where's my super suit?
What?
You tell me when I saw this woman!
What about movies like Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Solaris? What about Logan's Run? Did you ever see that?
No, it's probably some dumb sports movie anyways.
Sports movie?
Okay, we gotta put a spotlight on this geek stuff, man.
What the fuck are you bitches babbling about?
We need to bring this to the mainstream, to the people.
Wow, this is even better than I imagined.
We have to show the world that it ain't just about comics and toys.
I have to possess this comic.
Hey, I tried to teach you how to handle comics in the sixth grade, but oh no, you wanted to play Little League instead.
Looks like a really rich fourth grader lives here.
Look at this place, man.
Go look, he's got a billion toys.
I have a Mego Isis action figure.
Mighty Isis.
We're not about dressing up as Green Lantern.
How often does one see a beloved fictional character come to life?
Every year at Comic-Con.
And hoping for that one day, that one fracking day, for Cylons to bring us down a possible space-age future shit.
That's exactly what it's about.
Oh, really? Yeah, the shit ain't gonna work.
Oh, man! I'm still geeking out about it!
All right, look. There's only one return, okay? And it ain't of the king, it's of the Jedi.
Looks like we got more Lucas hounds here to mock Roddenberry.
You'll have to excuse him. He's not down with the trilogy.
There's only one trilogy, you fucking morons.
Oh, Star Wars geek.
Oh, I'm the geek? Look at you two whipping out your preciouses.
I'm gonna kick your ass back to the Shire if you don't shut your fucking mouth.
Where are the stars in this piece of shit?
All right, guys, you have your mission. Go forth and wreak havoc.
I say we stay here and fight it out.
Come on, you fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't fight? Shit! I'll fucking take all you want!
I got a Spider-Man t-shirt.
Hey folks, it's OG here. Although the show is a little bit late, I guess it's better late than never. What you are about to hear is the New York Comic Con 2013 interview show. These are some of the interviews, or I should say all of the interviews, that me and Big Kev did at our booth this year in Artist Alley. A bunch of guys, Eric Scarecrow, Peter Beagle, Dave Dorman, Royden Lepp. You're in for a pretty good treat. I hope that you enjoy them. And, of course, coming up later this week also, we will have a full new episode of Big Kev's Geek Stuff as well. So enjoy the interview show, and we will be back in a few days with episode 305, I believe we are at. Thank you, and good night.
Raphael Albuquerque, right?
Yeah.
I'm saying it the American way.
That's okay.
Okay. Let me know when you're ready.
I'm recording.
It's recording?
Yeah, we're good to go.
Hey, Big Kev here at New York Comic Con 2013 with superstar artist Raphael Albuquerque. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Are you?
I'm good. I'm very excited. Raphael stopped by the booth to do a few minutes with us today here at the big convention. He's here. He's meeting and greeting guests. He's signing books. He's having a good time. I saw him before. He had smiles on his face, and that's always good on day one because by day four, who knows? Right?
Yeah.
Raphael Albuquerque, you've heard us talk about him many times. Fantastic book that we always talk about, American Vampire. Now you worked on that. It had a little bit of a hiatus, but you told me it's coming back.
Yeah, exactly. We are coming back in March. And so Scott and I, we are already working on promotional image and stuff.
Right.
And Scott's like polishing the first script, so I'm very excited about looking at it and, you know, start it again. Feels like come back home, I guess.
That book, I mean, as far as comics go, that book really made you a household name. I mean, that book was super, super, super popular when it came out. How did that make you feel? I mean, that's got to be a great kind of a boost to your ego, I would say.
I think it was the how well it was received, it was definitely a surprise. I think me and Scott and everybody, everything we wanted was telling the best story as we could. And I can just be happy and grateful for, you know, for the support of the fans and everybody. And that's what keep us, you know, warm to keep doing.
Right. And you've been doing other things as well. I know you worked on Animal Man.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
Right.
Yeah, it's been fun. I know Jeff Lemire for a while, and we always wanted to work together since then. And we tried a lot, and it ended never happening.
Right.
Until now. So, since I was in the hiatus, Jeff asked me if I'd like to do this very important arc of Animal Man, and I was very flattered, and it's been a lot of fun.
So, will the end of your arc on Animal Man coincide with you beginning the return of American Vampire?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And you're here at the con, and I know that you're selling your art book. It's called, what's it called?
Garage Days.
Yeah, Garage Days. Is that like convention sketches? Is that like your sketchbook presented for all to see?
I have never done a sketchbook before, but because I don't really do sketchbooks, or I don't really draw that much when I'm not working, basically. So the few things I did in this last, I don't know, 4 years, I just collected in a 60-page book and finally put out.
Yeah, and I checked it out. It's great. You should definitely check it out. If you're coming down to the show, you can meet Rafael Albuquerque. What's your booth number?
It's F9.
F9.
Right in
Artist Alley, number F9, and check it out. Rafael, thanks so much for spending time on Big Kev's Geek Stuff.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate it. Hey, it's Big Kev. We're here at New York Comic Con 2013 with superstar artist Dave Dorman. How are you, Dave?
I am fine in New York after all these years. It's probably been 12 years since I've been here.
So here's what's really funny. I see Dave at different shows around the country. I see Dave at every celebration. And we always have a good chat. We're talking about the things that we enjoy. And I turn around, and behind our booth, right in the next aisle, in my eye line, is Dave Dorman at New York Comic Con. Amazing.
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought it? Now, Dave, I know that you have a bunch of things going on. I want to touch on a few of them.
Okay.
I know the Wasted Lands.
Right.
What's going on with that project?
Well, right now, Sequentialink.org has been running for free the Rail graphic novel. So if you check that out, you'll be able to catch up on what's happening with that. And come this spring, we will be producing an omnibus, which features that graphic novel plus a number of other pieces of material that have been published, getting that back into the marketplace, and then following that up with the second graphic novel to continue the series.
Right, and now somebody is also developing a game.
That is correct. A company called Silent Gunflake has produced, or is in the process of producing, they're in game testing right now, a game based on my Wasted Lands world. It's called Rail Iron Wars, and it's sort of a combination of Risk and Magic, where you have a board game,
right,
but you also have a card game element along with it.
Oh, nice.
So it's these giant sort of war trains that you start with. You can build armies on top of them. You can add weaponry on top of them. And you go out and you try to conquer the world of Rail.
Wow, that's great.
It's very cool. And the way that the guys are developing it is that you can play it as a board game, you can play it as a card game, or you can combine them both and have a bit more expanded experience.
Yeah, the complete experience.
Exactly.
That's great.
So it's very cool. I don't think that anything like this has been done before. And it's going to have just a ton of cool Dave art.
Now, did I hear also that you're doing some sort of sequential story as well?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I'm working on right now. One of which is ties in with my Hitch character, which is a motorcycle zombie.
Right.
Just 2 months ago, a magazine called Monster Massacre from Titan Books published the first of what I hope will be a series. They just asked me back to do a couple of more episodes for the next couple Monster Massacres. So this is sequential art, something that I don't normally do. It's pretty fun, experimental.
Sure.
Things that I can teach myself with that, and then I can bring into the rail graphic novels a little later as I get to those.
Right.
So, you know, it's fun. Dave Elliott, the editor of Monster Massacre, has been a friend for years, and he just loves my work and really gives me good feedback. And it's a nice experience working with him and with Titan.
That's great. And the last thing I want to touch on, of course, I mean, it would be... it would be unheard of for me not to talk to you about, you tell me if I'm wrong, I'd say the thing that you're most well known for, your Star Wars imagery, the prints.
Absolutely.
And the images, and I, of course, am a huge fan. Everybody knows what a big fan I am of your artwork, of your Star Wars
Thank
artwork
you.
In particular. Do you have a new piece cooking on the horizon with everything that's going on? It's like the whole convention is falling down.
There you go. There are a couple of things. Right now, I'm actually talking with the 501st about doing their Christmas card.
Oh, nice.
So hopefully that'll still be viable news by the time this comes out.
Uh-huh.
But that's only for the 501st. As far as other artwork goes that's Star Wars related, I don't have anything on the boards right now. Things are sort of in a lull since the Disney purchase,
right,
and them trying to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not working with Acme, but I'm sure that they're putting out a few items.
Sure.
But I'm not associated with those.
Right.
But I'm keeping my ear out, and I keep emailing people that I know and let them know that I'm still interested. And as they work out what they need to do, for the upcoming film in 2015, they'll start, having some new material.
That's
so
great.
So, my name is out there. I'm ready to do more. Just need to get that call.
Now, tell me, Dave, if the fans want to check out your work, where can they go to do that?
Oh, gee.
On the interweb. Yeah, is there any particular place?
My wife is going to hit me with a hammer about this because I haven't updated my website in such a long time.
Oh, boy.
I mean, really, the easiest thing right now is to just Google my name.
There you
go.
Dave Dorman.
I really do need to get that website back up and running. I do have a couple of Facebook groups, Dave Dorman Studio, Dave Dorman's Wasted Land, Dave Dorman's fan page. So if you just Google, my name without the images, you'll come up with ways to find me.
There you go.
So, I'm stepping into almost the 20th century.
Almost. You're almost there, Dave.
Almost
a little
there.
Push.
So
just a little push.
Maybe by the time the next celebration comes around in 2015, I'll have a real website. We'll have some more artwork. And
great.
All the fans will be happy.
So let me close by saying, we are going to get this up probably while the convention is still going on. So for people coming to the convention, they can check you out in Artist Alley. What booth are you in?
I am in booth Y1. That's Yes, One. And I am with the Other Dead people. I just did a cover for them, which is sort of an animal zombie thing.
Nice.
It's very crazy. Kevin Eastman is one of the creators, and he will actually be here tomorrow,
oh,
Saturday.
Great.
And so I'm sitting with them all weekend, and I have prints, and autographs are free.
Yeah, one of those prints belongs to me.
Yeah.
One of those is mine. I eyed it. Check out Dave Dorman if you're coming down to the show down in Artist Alley. Thanks so much, Dave.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's Big Kev, and we're here at New York Comic Con 2013. This is day three, this is?
Day three,
and we're here. We're very happy to have with us today one of the great fantasy authors, Peter S. Beagle. Why do you know Peter S. Beagle? Because probably you've read some of his writings, but most people might know Peter S. Beagle as the creator of The Last Unicorn. That's right. Remember that cartoon film that we all watched our entire lives growing up? Peter S. Beagle responsible for that film. And we're very happy to have him with us today. How are you, sir?
Actually, I'm wide awake, and usually it takes me to the third day of a convention to be completely awake, especially when I've come from California. But I grew up in New York, so it's always lovely to be here. I usually stay on the Upper West Side with my favorite cousin. And when the weather's good, I just walk down to the Javits Center because I'm back in New York, and when you're in New York, you walk.
That's it. That's the truth. And you do a lot of walking at a convention, all of us. But, Mr. Beagle, actually, you walk to get here, which is great.
Oh, it's a delight.
Yeah.
I live in California where you don't get to do a lot of walking unless
true.
You really look for it.
I've been to California and I noticed that. Not a lot of walking going on.
Oh, there's a famous Ray Bradbury story called The Pedestrian.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that goes back a long way and it's still largely true.
Sure. Let's, if we can, let's talk about The Last Unicorn. So for years and years, Last Unicorn, there was a release on VHS. That's how far back that goes.
Right.
For so many years, it was out of print. And so many people, there were underground copies going around. And people were sharing them and wearing them out because there was such an overage of watching the film because it hadn't been re-released and so on. I'm guessing a lot of people in that time period were trying to reach out to you going, hey, can we get this? We're looking for it. What's going on?
Well, in the same way, when I first heard of J.R.R. Tolkien, I was 15. 1954, there was a great review on the front page of the New York Times Book Review. And as a teenager, I thought that sounded really interesting. I'd love to read it, but I couldn't find it. It took me 4 years until I was in college to find The Lord of the Rings.
Wow.
And even then, it was something passed around between friends. It was like a secret code.
Right.
When I wrote a book about coming across country with my best childhood friend on a couple of motor scooters 50 years ago, when I mentioned Tolkien, the editor insisted that I describe, when I mentioned The Lord of the Rings and compared Cleveland as we were passing through it to Mordor, the editor insisted that I be specific about what Mordor was.
Right.
And later on, when I was first doing magazine writing, I did a piece on The Lord of the Rings on spec for a magazine that usually bought my stuff. And they turned it down on grounds that Tolkien was not contemporary enough. That was the phrase. Later on, that same piece became the introduction to the Tolkien reader because the Tolkien explosion had just happened.
Right.
So it's often a matter of timing.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of being in the right place at the right time.
Sure.
And as the Spanish proverb says, when it's raining soup, it's no good to be out there with a fork.
That's right. Excellent, excellent. And so now, of course, the film has been re-released in different formats, Blu-ray and so on and so forth. And in addition to that, there's been a comic book made out of it.
A graphic novel,
yes. A graphic novel by IDW, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
And that has been a huge success. Tell us about those two things and how this sort of resurgence is kind of affecting you. I see you a lot more at conventions now. I see you're doing a lot of book signings and things. And remind me, I want to tell that story about your and my connection from a long time ago, but tell me how this whole re-explosion of The Last Unicorn is affecting you.
I attribute it a lot to my all-purpose hustler, chauffeur, agent, editor, and as he would say, lackey, Mr. Connor Cochran, who began dragging me to conventions 10 or 11 years ago.
Right.
And has tirelessly hustled the book in every format, in every possible way, ever since. If it hadn't been for Connor, I don't know. And if it hadn't been for being dragged out like that, I would never have known that I had a fan base. I don't know how else to put it.
Right.
I had no idea of how many people really loved the book, knew my work, and it's mushroomed from there.
Sure. It's really great that something that's so so timeless and so wonderful for people of all ages
is still available in this day and age, is still available for them to enjoy in any format?
You're never sure, because I still remember doing a television script years ago with a role in it for a black dancer who lived in Oakland, where I live, and she had worked with one of my heroines, Catherine Dunham, and gradually, as she aged, gone more into straight acting. But she took time out and wrote a book about Catherine Dunham and told me, and was published in a series of books about dancers. And she told me, I will never do that again. I don't know how you guys do it. You write a book, you don't know if you got it right or not. When I'm dancing, I know, or acting, I know if I'm doing it right, because the audience will tell me, my body will tell me.
Right.
But you guys, you don't know if you got the book right. You don't know if anybody's going to read it. You can't be sure it'll even get published. It goes out there. Maybe you hear from one or two people. Maybe you never hear back. You have no feedback. You have no idea if you achieved what you meant to achieve. She said, I'll never do that again. Never. And I understood what she was talking about.
Sure. And the last thing I want to close with is a story which I've told you on a number of occasions, but I want to put it out on the air because it really was a wonderful gesture. Sometime in the 90s, way back then, I was madly in love with a young lady whose favorite book from her childhood was The Last Unicorn. She loved the film. She loved the book. Such a fan. And I managed to find a first edition of The Last Unicorn, and I managed to find your address, because in the 90s it wasn't stalking yet. It was just finding a guy who wrote a book.
Right.
And I sent you the book, and I sent you a letter, and I asked you, I told you my whole story about how I felt about this young lady and how this was such a special gift for her and so on. You wrote a wonderful bit in the book, signed it, and you also wrote me a nice letter back. I wish I had it now so that I can read it. It was very touching to me, and it was very touching to the young lady, and I'm very, very happy and grateful that you are the kind of person who is able to do that for other people. So I wanted to, this is my chance to publicly thank you in front of all my listeners for being that kind of person.
You're very welcome, and I'm certainly honored. And the best thing I know to say to that is, in most situations, I try to do what I think my father would have done, because he was that kind of person.
Right.
And if it doesn't quite suit the situation, I try to decide what my oldest daughter would do. But one way or another, I'll get it right, or I'll try.
It's great that you have both of those generations to lean on. But I have to say, as we close, Peter S. Beagle is here at the convention. He's in Artist Alley. Do you know your booth number?
B14.
B14. You can come. You can meet Mr. Beagle. You can talk to him. I've had a great time talking with him today. He's got plenty of copies of all of his books. He's got the comic book. He's got the film version. Anything you need from Mr. Peter S. Beagle, you can get it at the book. They'll sign it for you. He's a great, wonderful man, and we're so happy that he was able to join us on Big Kev's Geek Stuff. Thank you so much, Mr. Beagle.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here, and I'll be right back at my booth as soon as I go pee.
Hi, this is OG here, and we are here Saturday. Is it afternoon at this point? I've kind of lost touch with reality.
I think it's reasonably considered afternoon at this point.
Okay. And today I have Zach Giolongo with us at the booth. You might remember, I guess it was a few months back probably at this point, right? 3-4 months back maybe?
Maybe even a little longer.
Longer
than
that?
Yeah.
We talked about his book Broxo on the show.
Broxo,
yeah, sorry.
Right.
We really loved it. It was a really awesome book. It was a fun independent title. And actually, I think we had a couple people tell us that they had picked it up. I don't know if that translates back to you or not. We tell people to.
Yeah, no, they all emailed me too and said, hey,
not at all, did they? Rat bastards. Listeners, do us proud here at Geek Stuff. If we tell you about something, let them know. But Zach has actually been working on something pretty exciting that's just came out from Dark Horse this week, right?
Just this week, yeah.
And it is Ewoks.
It is.
Which, you know, Ewoks. Some people have feelings about Ewoks.
Except, you know what? Here's the thing that I've already discovered.
All right.
So the book is Ewok Shadows of Endor.
Right.
Graphic novel from Dark Horse, available this week. For every kind of like one person that's like, Ewoks, there's like 30 more who are like, I love the Ewoks,
right.
Where have they been? You know, all this kind of stuff. It's great. It's been overwhelmingly positive.
So, I remember seeing the listing in previews, but I don't know a ton about the book, and in case our listeners don't either. Tell us a little about it. Is it dark? Is it middle of the road? Is it childish? Where does it fall on the spectrum?
So, for those of you who have read Broxo,
right.
or have not, it's appropriate for kids, but there's a little bit of darkness in there. I mean, you know, it's like the original Star Wars.
Right,
you know, I mean, there's adventure and there's fun and swashbuckling and that kind of thing, but, you know, there's not everybody makes it out alive.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Fair enough.
But what the book does is it sort of attempts to take the old cartoon series,
right.
which was very young.
Right.
I don't know if you remember the two Ewok movies.
I do.
Okay.
And actually, I'm not an anti-Ewok guy. I'm okay with Ewoks.
The Ewok movies are good.
Yeah, they're fun.
They are good, like family movies.
They might not be legitimate copies, but I own them.
Well, that you know what? I don't think that they're easy to come
by. No.
Legitimately anyway, so that's, you know.
Yeah.
You know, those movies are good. They're adventure, and there's scary parts. And,
absolutely.
And I don't know if you remember, like, in the second movie, Sindel's family bites it in the first 5 minutes. That's the opening scene. The entire family gets blown away.
It's the Bambi's mom of the Star Wars universe.
Right, so anyway, so this book takes the cartoon and the movies and then Return of the Jedi and sort of attempts to kind of make the Ewoks a little more cohesive.
Okay.
Because there's kind of different versions of them, and there's kind of different, you know, iterations of some of the characters. And the book takes place about 8 months before Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
And we're seeing the Empire come in and start to kind of sniff around Endor, starting to build things, and the Ewoks are kind of like, what the hell's going on?
That's an interesting, that's a fun period, though, I think, in the universe, that little gap in there. So, and we were talking before the mics went on a little bit about it. This is digest format, right? So this is the...
Right. So it's small.
Right.
Dimension-wise. I don't know the exact dimensions off the top of my head.
Small is the exact dimensions.
Right. and it's like 80 pages, full color.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. So, of course, if you're a Star Wars fan, if you like Broxo... Is it Broxo?
Broxo.
Broxo. Why do I keep saying A?
That's why no one's been buying it. No.
Damn it. I swear. It's even on my bookshelf at home. I look at it all the time. Damn it. Well, if you're a fan, and you're a Star Wars fan, and you're an Ewok fan, or an Ewok hater, I'm going to say pick this up anyway.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? There are already some reviews that said, I picked up this book anticipating I was going to hate it, and I ended up loving it.
See?
So I'm like, hey, that's great. I'm all about spreading the Ewok love.
Absolutely. So please be sure to check out that book and
Broxo.
Yes, finally. Please be sure to check out Broxo as well. And Zach, thank you for stopping by the booth and taking the time to do a couple minutes with us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Okay, it's Big Kev. We're here at the end of day two of Comic-Con. And I happen to wrestle Frank J. Barbieri. Now,
a literal wrestling away from the booth.
Yeah, I did literally dragging, kicking, and screaming over here to Big Kev's Geek Stuff in Artist Alley. Himself over the other side of Artist Alley, and you may recall us talking about one of my favorite new books out there. It's called
Blushing Already.
it's absolutely the truth. It's called Five Ghosts, a unique concept, beautiful art, and Image Comics puts it out, right? I've read every single issue. My co-host, OG, the Trader Waiter, has only recently caught on to the wave, if you will. Thanks for coming down. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm going to eat all of your candy corn.
I know. You would not be the only one.
When I say it's my favorite candy, people love to tell me, like, it's not really candy. It's just sugar. Like, I'm like, yo, step off.
Quick, show them all the exclusives that are colored like candy corn.
Wait. Oh, God, it's all in front
of
me.
There are. It's not even a joke.
That one comes with candy corn.
That one does come with candy corn. Yes, sir.
You guys are doing it right. Doing it right.
So we want to talk about Five Ghosts, of course. Now, my understanding is you self-published the first issue, and someone at Image got a hold of it and said, oh, my God.
We were floored. But, yeah, this is actually our one-year anniversary, technically.
Uh-huh.
We released the first issue, the exact issue that came out via Image.
Right.
Here last year at New York Comic Con. We actually kickstarted it the May before.
Nice.
So we had, like, the first five pages done, well, all right, real big story time. So essentially I've known Chris for about 6 years now, and we've been working together for around 3 or 4 years already on a book that ended up going nowhere, just like that we were going to self-publish. And I got really burnt out on that. I loved Chris's art, and I was like, you know what? I was an English teacher at the time, so I guess literary stuff was on my brain.
The way you described that, I thought it was a Marvel book.
No, it was totally self-published. But so I thought of Five Ghosts.
See what I did there, Scapegoat? I said it, you know, because he said it went nowhere. I said it was a Marvel book. See what I did?
But
well, there goes all of our other interviews.
Yes, all of them. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
Anyhow, I had the idea for Five Ghosts. I convinced Chris, listen, let's stop doing the book we're doing, try this, I really like it. Made the pitch, stopped teaching, had no money. We had the Kickstarter, kickstarted the first issue, released it, and then lo and behold, someone from Image picked it up and gave it to Eric Stevenson, the publisher
there. Eric.
Mm-hmm. And they swooped in, were like, would you like to do this here? We were like, yes, please God, yes, yes, yes. So now here we are. It's been a crazy trip.
And let's talk about that. You had the idea, you had the concept. Where the hell did that come from?
It's funny because I remember exactly how it came about.
And can you, and while you're telling a story, can you give us a little overview? We've talked about it on the show, but for the listeners who maybe are joining us for the first time or who haven't caught one of the, I don't know, half a dozen times we've at least talked about this, or more than that, I guess, at this point.
Well, certainly. So Five Ghosts is the story of a treasure hunter who's in a kind of amorphous 30s time period. We don't really narrow it down, but he gets the powers of five ghosts, which are characters from literature. And it's Musashi Miyamoto, the samurai, Dracula, Merlin, Robin Hood, and Sherlock Holmes. So he has ghosts, quote-unquote, we say. We explain what they actually are in the book.
Right.
And he can channel their powers. So, yeah, it's been really fun. And he himself is kind of an Indiana Jones-type character. And, again, it's our story, but it's very much rooted in those familiar elements.
Sure.
And I feel like we're so happy that people connected with that and then gave us a chance to tell the story we want to tell.
Right.
And, we weren't thinking about it at the time, but what I was actually thinking of is I knew I wanted to do kind of like a period piece, like a 30s piece, in kind of the more pulpy style that Chris drew the book in. And I knew I wanted it to be about a thief, but I didn't know what the, like, hook was.
Right.
And I was thinking, I was like, well, what if he's, like, super attentive and, like, has detective skills? And I was like, oh, well, what if he could actually channel Sherlock Holmes? And then from there, I'm like, oh, why stop there? And for some reason, I decided to settle on five. And
right. There you go, kind of, five ghosts.
Then it just, like, in my favorite part of writing is kind of, like, building mythology and extrapolating from there. So once I had that concept, I really just kind of started pulling apart. And then Chris immediately just got it. Like, he sent me sketches, like, the next week.
Sure.
I'm like, that's what the book needs to look like. Good job. And he actually colored half of the first issue, too.
Wow.
He was going to, and he was hand lettering it. He spelled a word wrong when he was hand lettering. I'm like, that experiment's over. Yeah.
We'll get a professional in to do that.
Well, I actually lettered the book myself.
There you go.
We'll get a more handsome person to let it.
Let's actually talk about Chris with the last name that clearly didn't get his ass kicked in high school, Mooneyham.
Moon's over my hammy.
I'm telling you, man, if one thing attracts you to a book, to a comic book, it's the
wacky
first impression that you get from the art when you open the book. I opened issue one, and I was floored. Such a great style, but you can tell where his influences come from like the world of a Mike Mignola or the world I had one on tip of my
old Howard Chaykin.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah,
very
Howard
square
Chaykin.
Faces.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And Gary Giannini was the one I was thinking of.
Chris is such a talent in that way too, because again, it's that fine line where you can tell what he likes, but he brings his own stuff to
right.
it. And what I always say, too, is why we got in at just the right time is people aren't really drawing in that kind of, like, I'll say throwback-y style
right.
without being, like, exploitive of it. But
sure.
he just kind of draws like that. And even just sitting at the con last year, we're sitting with a bunch of people who all draw, like, house superhero style.
Right.
His work just stands out. And, again, I think that really helped us raise the profile of the book. And he does
right.
an amazing job. I mean, he likes really busy paneling, and that's so fun to write for because I know if I write, like, 10 panels, he'll get it on the page in a good way and... And we work really close together. I mean, like, again, straight up, like, for, like, some fight scenes, I'll be like, oh, okay, Chris, draw a fight scene and let him have fun because I trust him and he does
right.
great work. And
we're continuing this series, right? Because I know the first trade has come out because...
Oh, my God, I just got a candy corn refill. Oh.
Because OG has read the book, ergo the trade must be out. So
thank you for picking it up.
Absolutely.
We're going to continue on with that, right?
But yes, we've we were planning initially to do a mini series, but it was really us being just a little like
cautious.
Exactly. I mean, we were totally unknown creators coming out of nowhere, and I didn't even want to seem like full of it to Eric at Image, the publisher, saying like, "You're gonna give us an ongoing series." So I was like, "No, we'll do an arc. We'll do a mini series. See how it goes.
Sure.
Maybe come back for another mini." But we love the book so much that clearly we had a million ideas, and because it has that literary element, we can use anything from the whole of like fiction and literature.
Sure.
So there's a million stories we can tell. So I just simply asked, like, I'm like, "Hey, would you guys mind if we keep doing this?" And the book's thankfully been doing well. And they're like, "Yeah, keep doing it as long as you want." So
great.
We'll actually be back this month. October 30th is our sixth issue, which
nice.
Is actually a oversized issue. It's 40 pages again. And our friend Gary Brown, who draws The Massive with Brian Wood, and he was actually Chris's roommate in school and our good friend, actually did this issue.
Oh, he did.
I don't like saying a fill-in because it wasn't a fill-in, but as a guest artist.
Sure.
He did a beautiful, beautiful job.
Mooneyham needed a break.
Mooneyham. Well, Mooneyham got ahead, thankfully. That's a nice nice thing about doing someone else for a month. But it comes out this month. And it's a one-shot, which is nice. So it's a done-in-one story.
Sure.
So we're hoping to catch some of the people who just got on the trade. And then we'll be back in November. So we're stay monthly. And we'll probably go through 13 straight, right through issue 13 with Chris doing all the art. And then we'll probably do, again, another trade. And then... hope we keep
hear that, OG. You're going to get to read those next bunch of issues, too.
Oh, that next trade is going to be so long, too. It's going to have the 40-page one-shot and then six issues worth of content in it. So.
Yes. So, it's nice. Yeah. It's do you find, and just as a side note, do you find that people are kind of gravitating towards the trade paperback more than a monthly issue?
Absolutely. I feel like in the same way that people like Netflix and binge-watching, like, it's really just the, like, hardcore comics fans who like monthly story. And I love reading books monthly. Like, I don't know. It's probably because I always did. And I like almost the waiting. Like, the waiting, a lot of times, and I feel like this way with TV. Like, you watch closer and you kind of read closer if you know that's all you're getting.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when I was younger and had more free time, I'd reread my single issues over and over. But
are you sure you didn't miss anything?
Yeah. But at the same time, like, I know, you do have to be thinking about it as a creator, like, writing with the trade in mind. I feel like the first arc of Five Ghosts, I was kind of obsessed with having the issues be a little more insular.
Right.
And now that we know we have the room, the next arc, the new arc is called Lost Coastlines. It's about, it takes place largely on, like, islands and jungles, so we're getting kind of out of the dark a little bit.
Great.
And it's nice to know we have the room. And again, just coming right at it as a six-issue arc, like I could kind of set some stuff up. And I one of my favorite things as a writer is pacing. So I'm still making sure it reads good as units. But it's so nice to know we have the room to tell like a big story and think of it much more as a film.
Well, Frank, I want to thank you so much for stopping down at Big Kev's Geek Stuff, spending some time and talking about your wonderful book.
Thank you for all this free candy.
Yeah, sure. And let me tell you, if you guys are coming to the con, you can see Frank J. Barbieri and Chris Honeywood. No, that's not it.
Mooneyham. Honeywood is better. My honey kit and Honeywood.
Chris Mooneywood. They're in Artist Alley. They're signing books there.
Table R7.
Now, R7. Now, Mooneyham's sketch list is finished for the con, as
what
I understand.
What a sellout.
I know, right? But Frank's going to help me get a little head sketch book. So
I'll write you guys poems for free.
There you go. We'll just stick it in front of him. Here, you have to do this.
Like a disclaimer, there will be no poems. I'm
sorry. No poetry of any time. Yeah, poetry maybe. You talk really fast at the end. Frank J. Barbieri, thanks so much for hanging with us.
Thank you for having
me. Check out the book. It's from Image. It's called Five Ghosts. Listen, you've heard us talk about it before. Now you've heard the creator talk about it. What else do we have to do to get you out there and reading this fabulous book?
It's also support your local comic book store. It's
absolutely.
$9.99. Like, we made the trade cheap so people get out there and pick it up. So
there you go.
Give it a shot.
From the creator himself, Frank J. Barbieri, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, guys.
Hello, folks. OJ here on, is today Friday? Today is Friday, right?
Nope.
Nope.
Not in Comic-Con.
I seriously don't even know anymore. It's Friday, sort of midday, not the end yet. It's getting late, couple more hours.
Not even though, it's like 60 minutes till this whole thing ends.
Jesus.
So the con explodes.
Except that the Artist Alley, they keep Artist Alley open until 8 p.m. They keep us here an extra hour.
It's Artist Alley.
But I'm not staying an extra hour. I'll be honest with you. So I am here with Eric Scarecrow, who has not been on the show since Toy Street.
Really?
We did a video segment with you at Toy Street the last time that happened.
The only time.
Really?
That was the last time. I mean, I see you. We talk. But outside of the show, we did.
Oh, my God.
We talked at your booth that day.
That was the last time I did geek stuff?
Yes. And that was how many years ago now? Three? It's got to be at least three.
Toy Street doesn't exist no more.
Well, you know, too much pussy marijuana. So eventually that was going to come to an end.
Yeah.
But but I've been trying to get Eric to do the show at no fault of his own. Mostly at my fault because I'm just way too busy and he's very busy. But we want to talk about a couple different things. I figured we would start out talking a little bit about something you have coming up.
Oh, okay.
And I know you can't share a lot, but you are handing out postcards, so you could at least share a little, I'm assuming.
Yeah. That's the project, the Kickstarter project that I'm working on right now. It's for an animation project called 9 Deadly Killer Pussies.
Okay.
Also known as 9DKP.
Now, if you haven't checked out some of the other animations that Eric has done in the past just for product releases and stuff.
Yeah, that was just for toys.
Yeah, but if you remember when we talked about those, when you released the second or third one that you had done,
right.
I was talking to you and I was like, when are you going to do an animated show? You're like, I really would love to do an animated show.
Yeah.
And here we are like a year and a half later probably.
2 years.
And you're 2 years later? And you're on the cusp of doing that.
Yeah, man. I mean, this project is really dear to me because I developed it like 5 years ago and... Now, you know, I basically, I don't want to say convinced or mind-tricked.
You Jedi mind-tricked somebody.
You know,
this is the animation project you're looking for.
Yeah, I'm partnering with a Japanese animation studio that really, really, you know, they believe in the project as well. And they think it's a really awesome concept.
That's awesome.
I also bring like a Western edge to it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I think that's... That's one of the things that they're looking at. Like, okay, well, you know, it's definitely a new concept and a unique perspective.
And they have to recognize the fact that you bring a fan base to it, right? I mean, not to pat you on the back, right?
Oh,
but,
man.
But people clearly are familiar with your work because I gotta tell you, for those of you who've been listening to the other segments that we've been publishing. The last 2 days, we keep talking about that. We have some of Eric's prints here at the booth,
right?
And people keep stopping by the booth and they're like, "Where is he?" And he doesn't have his own booth this year. How come? I don't know. I'm not his PR guy. Where can I find him? Maybe at my booth later. That's been the conversation. So, what I mean, clearly people are familiar with your work and you have a fan base, right? Because they know your work.
Yeah,
that's
kind
of playing to it at least a little bit.
Yeah, this is definitely, it very, very grassroots level, you know. This campaign, I mean, if you look at this project, it being an animation project versus if it was a toy collectible project.
Right.
It's a different scale.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, you know, and it's a different market, too, where, you know, the animation crowd is you know, they are bigger than the art toy crowd.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a certain amount of crossover, but I think the crossover is more that people who enjoy art toys also enjoy animation. But
yes.
Maybe not everybody who enjoys animation understands or appreciates art toys.
Well, art toys, but they appreciate collectibles.
Right.
Based on the animation.
Right, so...
And that's what I'm aiming for, because, you know, I think this is what makes sense. I've been doing collectibles for...
Many years.
Yeah, like, prior to ESC, I've been doing it for over... Since 2002, that's 11 years.
I was going to say, it's probably been about 10 years. Probably.
Yeah, and, you know, even through ESC Toy, I've released, you know, so many figs. And one of the constant questions and inquiries was, what's this figure related to? Is it related to... you know, a comic, a game, animation, so on and so forth. And you know, in the beginning, I'm like, it's just an art piece, you know, it's not. But I felt that something was happening. Like, you know, there's a natural question, and people want to know more about these characters or whatever, you know?
That's that licensed collectible mentality. The toy movement in general is that people don't understand that not everything is based on something else.
No.
Because everybody's used to buying, you know, Batman toys or Star Wars toys or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know what I mean? And
now,
like, NECA puts out all the movie toys and Mezco all the movie. So they're used to there being some sort of background.
Yes, yes, you're absolutely right about
that. Excuse me, are you going to let Eric Scarecrow do any of the talking in this interview?
He is.
I'm just saying.
He's been talking, sir. He's been talking. I haven't interrupted one of your interviews yet. I'm just saying. I'm just putting that out there. But I mean, this is a conversation that both me and you have probably had off mic, right?
I've had similar
conversations with other guys in the art toy world, movement, whatever you want to name
it. Right.
So I think that it's great that you're figuring out you've figured out a good way to hopefully bring the two together.
Right, right.
And then continue both of them forward parallel, you know, at the same time, you know.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest, I feel I could do more.
Okay.
So,
and I know you want to do more.
Yeah, I could be complacent where I'm at, but I really feel like I could do more.
Right.
So why don't I try?
Absolutely.
And, you know, and yeah, I've tried doing this with networks, Harry but Potter, I think Wizard Kickstarter is gonna be. You know, with people giving me a chance. Like, they're the ones that really, you know, if you could move the crowd and they see something that they like and believe in, you know, then it becomes something of a reality, so.
And then the good part about Kickstarter, of course, is that for all intents and purposes, right, Kickstarter is really like, it's a pre-sale mechanism.
Yeah.
Right? So you've already established your, at least the beginnings of your base, or your fan base, or your audience, and then it spreads from there. And if it's successful, then you move on to continuing the project or the next project, and maybe you don't need Kickstarter then.
No, I think having...
Not that Kickstarter is bad.
I understand that crowdfunding element. Yeah. I think one of the things I think about the crowdfunding, especially in this day and age, is that it's like, it builds momentum.
Right.
For you look at, let's say, old project. Like, you even see projects based on old IPs.
Right.
You know, and things that a TV network or a Hollywood studio, I'll talk about entertainment in particular, they'll deem, you know,
the greatest American dollar,
hey, we got this. We got this, you know, they'll say, look, I got this idea to... You know, like the Veronica Mars example. The creator's like, hey, you know, I got this idea. You know, let's try this. But meanwhile, Warner Brothers is like, look, the studio's just like. What was smart was he said, look, let me go on Kickstarter. Okay, I'm pretty sure he did a lot of certain things on his own dime.
Right.
To Warner Brothers, it won't cost you a thing. Let me just see if this works. What's it going to cost you if it's on the shelf already?
Right.
Well, not even on the shelf. It was like in the
vault.
Yeah. So, when, you know, this thing grosses $6 million.
Yep.
It's a statement at this point.
Sure.
It's not like, oh, it's a fluke. It's a statement.
Warner Brothers recognizes now that there's still life in it.
Yeah, and it's showing you that it's not just the appeal of the project, but it's the momentum that came with the crowd. And I think when you have people involved and they feel like they're really participating in
the process.
They're part
of the process, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, it's like, you know, you're not just putting out product. These people are getting to it's like a yay or nay. Like, you know what, I love this, I want to be part of it, and they back it.
You know what it's like? It's like when you get when you buy a movie and you get the behind-the-scenes featurette. This is the behind-the-scenes featurette before.
Yeah, and that's awesome. That's, like, really awesome.
Yeah, it definitely is it's definitely an interesting... The crowds... Funding crowdsourcing is definitely an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah,
that's very hot right now. But it makes a lot of sense. And of course, the most important part, I think, which I don't think you will have an issue with, but is making sure that your project stands out.
Oh.
But again, I think what the benefit that you have is that you have a pool of people to at least alert.
that the project has launched again.
Again, at a grassroots level.
Yeah,
so.
you're underestimating yourself. You're being far too humble, I think.
I think
people just try to do it without anything, right? They got their best friend at home on the couch, and they're like, tell someone.
That's
I got 10 followers on Twitter.
I'll say that's ill planning. Right. Because this is a campaign, man. Like, sure. It's you know, you really have to... oh my God! You really have to prep for these things, and a lot of things pop up that you aren't aware of. And I think one of the cool things too that Kickstarter does is it doesn't take down projects that either are successful or failed.
Yep.
So you could really study what worked and what didn't work. You know, and you're looking at the comments that the backers gave, and you really look at their insight, and you'll see with these people. Either complain about this or they're, you know, it's such an interesting concept, dude. Like, yep. I'm, you know, when Kickstarter first started back in what, 2009.
Is it that old?
It's not even, that's young.
Yeah, but I feel like I didn't even hear about Kickstarter.
After all that talking we did about it.
Oh, maybe 2009. I'm trying to think the first Kickstarter campaign I contributed to.
It was
the Toy Break OMFG. Series 1.
Yeah,
that
was...
what, 2010, maybe?
Yeah.
So, yeah, 2009. Now, okay.
And they broke, what, $15,000 in 1 week, right?
Yeah, I mean, they blew it out of the water.
Yeah.
Good for them. I mean...
I mean, I think, like, Kickstarter as a whole has grossed over $500 million today. It's probably even more than what I'm saying right now.
Right.
That's a very big deal.
And it was...
You know, it's letting people know, like, hey, you know what? You know, you really could... get things done.
Well, it's just another element of that cutting out the middleman.
Well, if the middleman gave some more opportunities to people.
Well, that's what I mean. What's great about it is it gives opportunities to people who wouldn't regularly have an opportunity.
Yeah.
In some regards.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So that's awesome. And that's going to be launching sometime in November.
Yeah, I'm aiming for early November to mid-November. If anything, it'll... late November, it's definitely dropping. It's going to start in November of 2013.
All right. So I would say then to the Geek Stuff listeners, you know that we'll be talking about it every week.
Yay.
Once it launches, no doubt, and leading up to the launch. So obviously, stay tuned to future episodes of the show. Stay tuned to the website because I'll post information as soon as I know that it's available. And I will make sure to share it with our audience. And, of course, we ask you to share it with your friends and family and all that good stuff as well. And is there any other projects you're working on that you want to talk about or anything? You want to just shoot the shit about something you hate or con experience overall? Or you want to tell me to shut the fuck up?
No, not at all.
All the options are cool.
I'm still working hard at ESC Toy. It's Kickstarter. The 9DKP Kickstarter is a lot of work, but I'm really looking forward to it.
I think I once said you're one of the hardest working people in toys that I know.
Yeah.
And testament to that is that I know that you're working on this Kickstarter project and you're spending a lot of time in it.
He is the James Brown of the designer world.
But I feel like I haven't seen you slow down or slack significantly in just your day-to-day ESC toy art and releases. I still feel like you're cranking shit out and good stuff. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
It's still all quality stuff. So it's good that it's good that you haven't had to sacrifice the quality of your product. I know you're sacrificing personal time and sanity. But, on the consumer end or the fan end, the product is still coming out and it's still great. So
thank you.
Congratulations on that. It's a feat in and of itself.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate that. I try to stay busy. It helps, especially this year has been really hard. I lost my dad in February. So
yeah, I'm very sorry about that.
No, it's okay. And then that... you know, going through that hard time and, you know, constantly working and, you know, dealing with the grief and the work, you know, the creative work really helps me get through the process.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
So gives you something to focus on.
Yeah, and it's positive.
Yeah, right.
You know, and that's one of the good things about, you know, I guess letting go, because you could go two ways when you lose someone. You know, you can either go
down the dark spiral, right, or you can kind of push through and.
Yeah, and my art and work, you know, as a whole, all my creative work has really helped me.
That's awesome. I'm you're fortunate to have that outlet, but I'm glad it helped you through the tough times.
Thank you.
As it were.
Thank you.
But thank you very much for sitting down with us.
It's greatly
appreciated.
Cool, man. I
appreciate it. And I hope that we don't have to wait 3 years
for
another con to get canceled or disappear.
Okay, I'm ready to interview Eric Scarecrow now. So if we can set that up, I'm ready to roll.
Before you're back on the show, we'd love to have you on anytime you want.
Thank you.
You want to come out, or we'll come to you, or we'll figure something out in the future.
Yeah. That'll be dope. Wow, awesome. I would love that. Yeah.
All right, everybody, be sure to check out ESCtoy.com. Of course, check out his shop. Come by the booth and check out the exclusives, because we have some awesome prints here. And, pay attention to what he's got going on. It's a lot. And, toys, prints, the animation project. It's a busy, busy man.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Eric.
Hey, it's Big Kev. We are cruising into the finale of day 4 here at New York Comic Con 2013. But for some of us, it's day 5. And of course, we're so happy to get the opportunity to talk with one of the more senior professors at the Joe Kubert School of Cartooning, Professor Fernando Ruiz.
Thank you very much.
You're
welcome.
Pleasure
to be here.
And, of course, Fernando, as you may or may not know, longtime contributing artist to Archie Comics.
Yes.
And also a professor, as we said, at the Joe Kubert School. How are you, sir?
Very good. Thank you.
Professor Ruiz and I go back a long way. We went to college together.
Yes, we did.
When we were younger men.
Yes.
Much, much younger.
It was like yesterday.
One of us. Like yesterday. And the professor is kind enough to come down and give us some time. And you put out a very interesting book. Not that your other work isn't interesting. I've always been a fan. But you put out a really unique book. Was that last year?
Yeah, 2012.
2012. Tell us a little bit about that book.
That was it was called Epics. And it was an anthology put together by myself and 4 other instructors at the Kubert School, 2 of which were also my students. And we had one theme, which was the 1950s. And we each did our own story. We each wrote it, we drew it, we inked it, colored it, and we put it out there. And the response has been very gratifying.
And that is that now leading to like a sequel project? Because I really liked all 4 of the story concepts in that book.
Thank you.
Is there something going to happen with that? Are we moving forward with the project in a different way?
We're doing another issue that's close to getting to the finish line. You know, you have 4 creative people. We're all in different directions, but we're getting back together to do another issue, and I'm taking my character from the first issue, and I'm writing more stories that I hope to spin him off into his own thing.
Into like a separate book, solo project,
if
you will?
Probably something like a trade.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, like a graphic novel.
And if we can take a minute, I'm very excited about that, but of course it would be remiss of me not to discuss with you your work at Archie.
Okay.
What have you been doing? What are you going to be doing? Now, I should say the professor has done some of the more interesting titles over at Archie Comics. Like Archie, wasn't it Archie's Weird Mysteries?
Archie's Weird Mysteries, yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was based on a cartoon. That was a lot of fun. That was like Archie was doing Scooby-Doo, but instead of it being some crooked land deal, it was a real ghost at the end.
Gotcha.
I love doing that because we got to draw monsters and vampires and robots and giant Pokemon in one issue. It was great. I also did the Man from Riverdale, where Archie was a spy.
Uh-huh.
And that I was working with Tom DeFalco. the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics for many years. And he really wrote the best script I ever worked from. And that stands head and shoulders above as the best project I ever did with Archie.
So those are some of the things that you have done. What are you doing currently with them?
Currently, I'm penciling Life with Archie, the magazine where Archie is married to both Betty and Veronica.
To both of them?
Both of them. In two separate parallel continuities.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see.
I draw the Veronica half of the book. And
the naughty half.
And I also do the covers and the frontispieces on it. And then on occasion, I do like other issues here and there for them. Like I just did Archie Becomes Thor, the Clod of Thunder, in Archie 648, which I think is on the stands right now.
Wow. You can go out and check it out at your local comic book store.
Yep.
That's great. And what do you have some stuff upcoming, either Archie or otherwise, other than the things that we've already talked about?
Well, we're moving into a new year of Life with Archie, and I hear there's something really big coming up in the next year, which I can't talk about.
Archie picking up a third wife?
I don't. No comment.
No comment.
No comment.
No comment.
I'm also going to be. I just got word that I got approved to do illustrate a book for Simon & Schuster on the popular Rabbids characters.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The Rabbids. Oh, that's great. Really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Why you?
They like what I do. I can draw.
That's true. You can. A couple other things I want to ask you. Is there a future for Captain Power? Or is it Major Power?
Major Power. Oh, I'd love to revisit Major Power.
This would be the professor's, what would you call it, dissertation?
That was my undergraduate dissertation? My senior thesis.
Yes.
Was my own comic book back in college. When I was a senior, I wrote, penciled, inked that one shot that I did. And God help me, that'll never see the light of day again.
You don't want to put that out as a special celebrate Professor Ruiz issue?
That was many years ago. That was 22 years ago.
Was it?
Yep.
Professor Ruiz, I want to thank you so much for coming and spending time with us today. Where can the folks check out your artwork or your stuff? And give us some information on the Kubert School as well.
Oh.
Kubert.
Well, for me, you could check me out at FernandoRuizEverybody.com.
FernandoRuizEverybody.com.
That's right. You could get some nice Fernando Ruiz t-shirts.
Oh, yes, I've seen the t-shirts.
Oh, they're popular among the students.
I bet they are.
And speaking of the school, next week, October 19th, the school is having an open house.
Oh, terrific.
Which is Saturday from 1 to 4, a great opportunity if you're ever curious about the school. If you just want to meet Adam and Andy Kubert, if you want to...
Will they be sketching that day?
I don't know if they're sketching, but they're certainly there to meet people. I'm sure they might sign things if you bring them.
Uh-huh.
But it's a great time to tour the school and meet the instructors. I'll be there. I'll be doing demos, and I'll certainly be sketching and signing anything.
Anything. Yours or not.
I don't care.
Professor Ruiz will sign it all.
Just happy somebody cares.
Thank you so much, Professor. That was Fernando Ruiz, professor at the Kubert School, artist for Archie Comics and Epics, one of my favorite anthologies from last year. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, it's Big Kev, sliding into home base on day 4. Here at New York Comic Con 2013. I'm here with Royden Lepp. Now, you may not remember, but I'm going to refresh your memory on Big Kev's Geek Stuff. We have talked about not one, but two of Royden's books, both called Rust, from Archaea, because I'm tired of being corrected when I keep saying Archaea. Everybody's like, it's Archaea, stupid. From Archaea, it still is one of my favorite books that Archaea put out, and I'm so glad you don't understand the tumultuous nature of this show today that allowed both myself and Royden to be here at the same time.
It takes a little bit of extra coordination to sit down in this crowd.
Yes.
After coordinating times and meeting up and all that stuff.
And,
you know?
And I'm so happy you're able to do it. Rust, what I, the book Rust, what I like to do is give the creator an opportunity to give us a little bit of what the book is about. Now, there's two out. What can you tell us about those?
So Rust kind of takes place in a alternate 1930s era. It's not really a point in time. I'm not calling it history. It's not really a future apocalyptic anything. It's just an imaginary place I created, so I get to create the rules.
Nice.
The Taylor family struggling after this in this post-war era. Robots were used to help in this fight in this great long war, and this young boy Roman Taylor, or young man Roman Taylor, his father doesn't come back from the war. And so he's trying to keep the farm together, keep the family going, and one day a kid with a jetpack named Jet Jones crashes through his barn being chased by a giant decommissioned war robot, and mystery and intrigue ensue. I like mystery. We don't know who Jet Jones is or where he came from or why he's being chased by robots, but the longer he stays on the farm, the more trouble he brings.
Nice. Does that kind of encapsulate where the with the whole what the whole series is about, both books?
Yeah, I mean that's the kickoff in the first volume, and so the journey of the series is really finding out what the Taylors are going to do in their situation, because they're in a pretty rough post-war era, and the farm is, I mean they're not going to make it, you know, this year if they don't get some help. And Jet's helping them out, but the longer he stays, the more trouble kind of shows up. So the journey of the series is really finding out who Jet Jones is, what he really is, where he came from, and whether he is the solution to the Taylor's problem or whether he is their worst nightmare.
Ooh, dropping a few clues there.
I guess so. I guess I did. Yeah, I didn't.
Very intriguing. And, of course, just to let the fans know, we are going to be giving away a set of these Rust books from Arkea. There, I said it. We're going to be giving a set of these away. We're going to ask you to email OG at geekstuffog@gmail.com telling us why you should get a set of these fabulous books. Tell me a little bit about your process, your artistic process, a little bit about where that comes from. How did you get here?
I've always been interested in art. I've been drawing my whole life. My dad was an oil painter. He taught me the basics when I was a kid about perspective and that sort of thing. And at a certain point, I decided I really wanted to pursue artwork, and I went to film school. I took animation. I was trained in 2D page flipping, old school animation.
Wow. The classics.
The classics, yeah. Although I didn't really get to work in it, I went straight into 3D. And 3D, I don't get to draw as much, so I ended up going home and working on stories that were essentially, you know, sequential storytelling, drawing on paper, and I kind of got into comics that way. I've always been a fan of comics, but I wasn't reading a lot in my early 20s. And I just sat down and started working on some ideas, and that's kind of how Rust came about.
And the popularity of Rust cannot be understated here. The book has become very popular. And are we allowed to talk about the other thing, the bigger thing?
We can talk about anything you want to talk
anything
about.
Anything I want to talk about. Okay, I understand that there is a film in the works.
It's true, yeah. It's out there. We actually sold the motion picture rights or the option for the motion picture to 20th Century Fox before the first book came out, just before.
Wow.
So, it's in development right now for a live-action movie. It's going great, I can say that. 20th Century Fox is really excited about the project. We have a really great team of people, producers. Simon Kinberg, who did X-Men First Class, he's writing one of the new Star Wars episodes. He's a great producer with genre pictures. Lean Brosh McKenna is the screenwriter. And we just recently, in the last few weeks, announced Carlos Saldana directing his
wow.
Live action debut. Yeah, so it's a really great team. I could not be more lucky.
Let's talk about for a moment the decision to go live action versus animation. Now, your style, I feel, could definitely lend itself to animation.
I agree. I mean, I'm an animator. I love animation.
Right. So where does the decision then come from to go to live action?
You know, I don't really know, because that wasn't my decision to make.
Right.
I'm glad they saw this as a live action film. That's what I would like to see it as. I would like to also see it as an animated, you know, episodic or an animated film. I think that would be great.
Right.
But I mean, I think every creator out there would understand the greatest incarnation of your work is seeing that real life, you know, so to speak, embodiment of these characters that you've drawn on paper. So for me, it's like a dream come true. If it leads to animation, that would be so awesome.
Yeah. Are we looking at any sort of time frame?
No, not yet. Okay. Yeah, I mean, as everybody knows, films take several years.
Forever, it seems, sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Once shooting starts, that's when everybody kind of knows. You know, right. You can get a pretty good idea when it's going to come out. So,
do you have some favorite picks for certain characters? You know, like in the dream world, if you could cast anybody living in some of the roles, do you have some ideas of people you'd like?
No, I like doing fan casting for your own book. It's It became really intimidating because I wanted to do that. I wanted to sit down and like, oh, who would play Roman? Who would play Jet?
Right.
The truth is, a lot of them are kids, and they will probably be largely unknown actors because they'll be fairly young.
Right.
But for everybody else, I mean, when it's something that's real, you start to actually think these things. Like, well, who's hot right now? Like, what actors are? I don't know who's cool, and like I don't really feel in a place to cast at all.
Ben Affleck, something for Ben.
I think Ben would be into it. Yeah,
because he's on the hot bandwagon right now.
Yeah, I think it would. Yeah, it would help cool him off a little bit. Maybe. I don't know.
That's not really the direction I was going in, but that was better than my direction. So, I don't know if you saw. I saw a T-shirt upstairs that had the old Batman '60s logo, but instead of saying Batman in the wings, it said Affleck, and it had one of those circles and cross through it.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
They don't waste any time hating around here, let me tell you.
Yeah.
So in conclusion, let me ask you, what are you working on now?
Right now I'm just working on wrapping up volume 3.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so we're hoping that will be the early part of next year, hitting
first
shows.
First quarter 2014.
Yeah, I'm hoping first quarter.
Cool.
2014, yeah. Cool. That'd be the idea. But, yeah, I don't have too much further to go. So we're just wrapping up Volume 3. After that, I'll be digging into Volume 4, and that'll be the final book in the series.
Oh, it will be.
It will be, yeah.
Is that where all will be revealed?
It will be a complete story then. I promise not to leave anybody hanging at the end of Volume 4.
And will there be Ewoks in Episode 4 of Rust?
I wasn't going to, but now that you bring it up, I'm thinking that I've always loved Ewoks.
Something small, furry.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
Distracting, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, something for the kids.
Something for the kids. Well put. Royden Lepp, I want to thank you so much. I know what a very difficult time it was for us to meet up with you and be on time for that meeting. And I want to thank you very much for coming down. You can check out Royden Lepp. Do you have a place where they can check you out, like a website, or should they just go to Arkea there?
They can go to Arkea. If you Google my name, thanks to my parents, I'm pretty easy to look up. I've got a portfolio online. I sometimes put new drawings and paintings up there, but not real frequently. So you can find me online if you Google my name, but I don't have any big fancy website.
Gotcha. Yeah. And you can look forward, hopefully in the near future, to the film. And of course, once again, we are giving a set of Rust books away, volumes 1 and 2. Over at the website. Well, not even at the website. You just need to email og@geekstuffog@gmail.com and tell us why you would like a pair of Rust volume 1, a set of Rust volumes 1 and 2. We're very happy to be able to do that. Royden, thanks so much for the time.
Thanks for having me on, Kev.
Hey, this is OG here on, as it's Sunday, I think, at this point. I think it's afternoon. I have eaten lunch, so I'm slightly better than I was 10 minutes ago. I am here on the con floor, of course, with George Vega.
Hello, all.
Vega. See, I get it right. After the first time, where I was corrected, I get it right.
Yes, Vega, just like the Street Fighter character.
That's right.
Just like that.
Right.
Vega, V-E-G-A.
So, of course, if you're a longtime listener to the show, you will recognize that name because George is behind Vegamation Press,
yes,
who's
sir.
Been working with us for a few years now.
Yes, 5 years.
5 years now,
this,
right?
This December will be 5 years.
Awesome. Yeah, we give away, or we talk a lot about, and we've been giving away George's company's art books, sketchbooks, collaborative projects.
Yep.
And obviously, we give them away to you guys when we get them.
Yep.
And there's always some great art in there. There's always some great artists in there. Actually, I think out of most of the people that have been in there, though, personal experience, Karen might be the first one that I've met in person. Other
yes.
than you, of course.
Right. I think so, because most of the guys in there are international. So
right.
Every time I make a lineup, I try to cover the globe, so to speak. And that guy, you know, he's from the U.S.
Right.
So you'll run into him, and he's a major con goer. So he's, you know, you're gonna see him everywhere, and he's just a heavy hitter as far as art goes.
That's awesome. Now, let me ask you, because I'm curious, now that you've said a lot of those guys are international, which I kind of knew anyway, mm-hmm. how do you, as long as it's not a trade secret, how do you choose, or how do you pick and choose who you work with? Because it's interesting that you choose a lot of international artists as opposed to
local guys or
artists.
Just US.
And not that there's anything wrong with that.
Right,
it's nice that you spotlight those, because I don't think a lot of people do.
Right.
So it's definitely unique to what you do.
Yes.
So is it because you know them, or you know their art, or how does that work?
Yeah, generally it's their art first.
Okay.
I'm everywhere as far as social media goes.
Right.
I'm on DeviantArt. I have an account there. So on DeviantArt alone, you get a lot of international artists.
Sure.
It's just a global setting, a global stage. And some are artists that I do know personally. And doing it so many years, sometimes I even get recommended artists. And we're finally at a point where some artists do approach us.
Oh, nice.
I meet them, and they're like, oh, you know, I've heard about your books, and so-and-so talked to me about it, and I'd like a shot at the book. And, you know, there's no major interview process. I just check out the art, and if it fits, it's in. Probably the only difficult part about it is I can't have too many of the same style.
Right.
If I have one anime guy or one guy who does, you know, very cartoony, I always try to, you know, I'll have a good fantasy guy, a good painter, or a guy with a painter technique.
Right.
And I'll have a guy with an animation technique. So that's the only thing where in every volume, I try to mix up the styles.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're not familiar with the introducing books specifically, right?
Right.
The nice part about it is, if for some reason, I mean, the art is always solid. Everybody's art across the board is always solid. But if you happen to be a fan of one type or one style, you're probably guaranteed to get something in there that you really, really like, right?
Right.
And then you'll hopefully get some exposure to some other stuff and open up your eyes a little bit to some other stuff.
Right.
Now, I know, as far as availability is concerned, introducing they can get through your website directly.
Yes.
Right? It's
yes.
Vegamation Press.
Vegamationpress.com.
Right.
Directly, or...
I believe it's Vegamation
Press. Oh, there he is.
Vegamation.
There he is. Thank you for correcting my name.
Shush, Big Kev.
That's the man right there.
Yeah.
through our website and Amazon.
Okay.
Actually, Amazon distributes our book. And
some of them are available electronically also, aren't they?
Yes, yes. Yep, you're right. I have the last two volumes are ready for digital download.
Okay.
And they are at a cheaper price, of course.
Right.
Because it's digital. And we're trying to cover as much as we can as far as getting the book out there. A selling point is having it on Amazon. On Amazon, if you have a Prime account, you don't have to pay shipping.
Oh, nice.
So that's another reason why I always push to get it on Amazon, is that way, if you have a Prime Amazon Prime account, you're not paying for shipping.
So there you go. Go over to BigKevsGeekStuff.com, click on our Amazon link,
right?
Seek out the books, and buy them from there. Everybody wins.
Yes, yes.
All right, so new introducing should be out
should
soon.
Should be out soon. I'm even saying maybe shipping last week of October.
Okay.
Art's already in. It's already at the printers. If proofing goes well, quality inspection goes well, then we'll be shipping immediately. We are taking pre-orders now.
Okay.
We're taking pre-orders now on our website only.
Okay.
Vegamationpress.com. Mm-hmm. You can go right on our website, and we already have a 10% discount
put it in there.
Oh, nice.
So at this point, you can get it for $17.99 plus shipping and handling.
Perfect. That's great.
So it's, you know, and that's only for pre-orders. After we start shipping, we'll have to get rid of that deal. But, hey, you know.
That's all right. Yeah. Now, in the downtime between the last volume of Introducing and what's coming out, you had time to do your own sketchbook.
Yes.
Finally.
Finally.
Right? Because, I mean, I've known you for quite some time, and I've seen pieces here and there and little bits here and there.
Right. But, in the background.
But it's about time that you took the opportunity to really showcase your own work.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about, please allow me to introduce myself, which is totally appropriate.
Yeah. It's my first sketchbook or art book, and it's showcasing my artwork.
Right.
Personal series I've done, some of the professional sketch cards I've done.
Right, you just did some Witchblade sketch cards recently,
yes,
right?
Yes, yep. Some Witchblade sketch cards, I just wrapped those up, and I got the permission from the company who actually put them out, which is Bragent, and I let them know I was putting this book together, and they said, you know, go ahead, you know, no problem. And a lot of personal stuff in there, too, you know,
awesome.
a personal work, professional work. It's a mixed bag. As far as availability, same channels.
Yeah, it's definitely a great book. I like it because, I mean, aside from the fact that you have a lot of unique stuff and original stuff, right, you've got some recognizable stuff, some Transformer stuff in there,
right.
and I'm a fan of the steampunk stuff just because.
Oh,
but,
yeah, I love that stuff.
You know, I even noticed in your own sketchbook, you even have a healthy variety in your own style, I guess.
Oh.
I notice differences depending on what it is you're working on.
Okay,
some,
cool.
Like some of the steampunk stuff, and I think some of the Transformers stuff looks very traditional, but some of your original stuff is clearly different. Not in a bad way,
but it's
just different. And that's awesome. It's great that you're still kind of really reaching out broad strokes to a lot of different people. So I'm going to recommend that you please check out Please Allow Me to Introduce Myself.
Yes.
Is this available on Amazon as well, or only through your site?
It will be available on my website and Amazon.
Okay.
Within probably by the time this hits the airwaves or digital waves or whatever you call it.
Right. Awesome. Anything else you have going on that you want to? Any other books that you're working with, solo artists that you're working with that you can talk about? I don't want to put you on the spot.
There is stuff in the works. It's not even far enough where I could even say anything yet.
Absolutely,
yeah,
totally
understand. That's a good question.
I figured I'd just throw it out there.
Yeah. Oh.
I don't want to put you on the spot. Well, George, thank you so much for stopping by the booth and taking a couple of minutes to talk to us.
Matt, thank you.
It was great to finally actually have you on the show.
Yeah, I'm actually glad to be on the show. And, you know, you guys have such great energy, and I listen to you guys all the time.
Well, thank you.
I can see how you could easily wrap up in this energy because you guys are awesome. Your energy is really awesome.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, you know, hopefully we'll have you back on again. You're always welcome. So if you want to, let us know, and we'll figure something out.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, brother.
Hey, it's Big Kev here on the unbelievable day 4 of New York Comic Con 2013. We're still surviving, barely. Also barely surviving, and joining us now is friend of this program, David Peterson.
Hello, sir.
Of course, David, the creator of one of our favorite books out there, Mouse Guard from Archaea.
Archaea, yes.
Archaea. Is it Archaea?
It's Archaea.
We always say Archaea.
That's
on
all right.
The show.
I've heard a lot of variations, so you're in good company.
Oh, gee, did you know it was Archaea?
I've heard several people tell me Archaea this past week.
Wow, so I've never heard. We've never been corrected before about that. Well, fine. Archaea. It's a book that if you haven't checked it out, you are doing yourself a disservice. So you must check it out.
Wow.
Mouse Guard. There's several different collections out. Four collections out.
There
now,
are four
right?
collections currently, and another one coming out in November.
And what's the one? Now, the one that just came out is the Black Axe.
Black Axe, which is the third in the main story series.
Right. And then there was one, Tales of the Guard. Legends of the Guard.
Yep. And that's there's a volume one out, and then the one that's coming out in November is a volume two
volume
of the Legends
two.
Of the Guard.
Uh-huh. And if you're a gamer of any type, you should find the Mouse Guard
video game. Not video game, board game, role-playing game.
Role-playing game.
Oh, day four.
And yeah, it is day four. If you can tell, my voice is shot.
I know.
But with regards to the role-playing game, right now it's out of print. And it has been for a little bit, so...
So if you're really lucky and you find one...
Yeah, if you find one for the regular price in a store, snag it. It is going for crazy prices on eBay and
I've
Amazon Marketplace.
I wanted to bring that up with you. What do you think about that?
I think with the box or with the box set of the role-playing game or the role-playing game system, it's in some ways silly because we intend to get it back in print.
Right.
So these are just opportunistic folks... Who are trying to take advantage of people who are excited.
Right.
In things like early issues of Mouse Guard, where there were only a certain number of them.
Right.
And that's it, and we're not revisiting it. I understand that that becomes a collectible. That
sure.
becomes something somebody's holy grail of collecting, or maybe not their holy grail, but some other
some
lesser...
Some sort of grail.
Some lesser relic.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like and, a saint's pinky.
Exactly. Exactly. Somebody's toe. Some
There you go.
Yeah. Some nun's toe or
so,
something.
But let me ask about while we're on the role-playing game.
Yeah.
Is there... It's complete in one package. You're not intending to do any additional material for the game.
Well...
Like supplemental material based on some of the new things that are happening in the books, that kind of thing?
We might. We might revisit it at some point.
Okay.
The main hardcover role-playing game book is all you need. That and some pencils and paper... And go raid...
Wow, old school.
Yeah, oh, it is old school. And then go raid all of your board games for their six-sided dice.
There you go.
It doesn't take the special, like, D&D polyhedral dice. This is six-siders only.
That's
so.
Right. Put your D100 away.
Yeah, yes. We tried to make this as accessible as possible. Now, we did a box set that has more components just to maybe make play easier.
Sure.
For the Uber fans to really geek out and
right.
everything.
But
all you really need is that hardcover... And Luke, who wrote the game, and I are both proponents of not overdoing, not oversaturating, not milking
right.
an audience, and really letting them play in a game with their imagination.
Sure.
So we didn't want to give too much information, but I think now there have been enough new Mouse Guard books that have come out.
Right.
We probably have enough for a supplement when he and I are both ready and on the same page to,
sure.
to sit down and actually work on it. But
there you go.
But in general, our rule is let's not do too many supplements.
Right. Let's talk about this property, this creation of yours, Mouse Guard. You could have easily, what's the term, bought in, sold out. And otherwise went to any number of different venues, animation, or toys, or these kinds of things. But I noticed that you keep it very close to the vest, which I actually appreciate.
Well, thank you.
There were a couple of things. I know there was a statue at
yeah.
one point.
Yeah.
There was maybe a couple of little plush.
Yeah.
But nothing extraordinary. I wonder if you could talk about your decision to do that.
Yeah,
the reins back a little bit.
I know that my livelihood, my success... is completely based on fans enjoying what I do and respecting what I do. And I only get so many books out every so often. So there's also a component of my relationship with my fans. In between books, showing them how the books were made. I have a weekly blog. I do live streams. I come to conventions. I talk with them. I look through portfolios. I chat with them about things that aren't Mouse Guard. That relationship that I have with the fans, whether
right.
I've even met them or not in person, is important, and I realize it. And so in that same way, I never want to take advantage
right.
of that. I never want to just put something out because I know we can make some cash. I want to put something out because it's cool.
Right.
Because it represents Mouse Guard well.
Right.
I put a lot of care into the books to craft them a certain way so that in this age of digital becoming more and more prevalent, and I'm not an anti-digital guy, but it means that when we do something that's in print, it has to be really special.
Sure.
The book has to be an art object.
Right.
And that's how I want to treat any kind of merchandise. It has to be special. I don't want to just churn out a plastic piece of junk.
Sure. We actually talked... on one of the other times that you've visited with us, Dave, we talked about the format of the books being sort of non-traditional. Now I see that Arkeia has put out sort of an oversized version of the books. Yeah. What's that all about? Well, I have no idea what that
is. Right when Fall, the first book, came out as a hardcover, and I was at conventions, there were retailers who were swinging by and saying, man, I sell a ton of your book. If you just did a new limited edition of this book and, like, did a different cover or put in a tip-in plate or signed and numbered it.
A tip-in plate.
Yeah. Like, I could sell each copy for, you know, $60 or $80. It was, you know, and I'm thinking, but it's exactly the same book.
Right.
Again, we're you want me to take advantage of this relationship of these kind people who are supporting my lifestyle. I'm not cool with that. The only way I want to put out something limited and special is if it really is special. Or reprint anything is if we're doing it a different way than the first way we did.
Right.
So fans had seen at conventions my original art pages. And
which are amazing if you get the chance.
Thank you. And they're inked, you know, just like lots of comic books. The original art, the physical original art, is black and white, and then I color it digitally for the final production.
Right.
But people were really enjoying looking through all the black and white pages at their full size. Because they get, you know, just like other comics, they get reduced down for printing. And I said, well, the fans seem to enjoy looking at those at that size. Why don't we reprint the whole book in black and white at the original size of the artwork, so it's like you're holding a portfolio of all the original pages in one binding.
And it kind of really gives you an even further insight into the way that you work, into the kind of the finer points of it, if you will.
Sure. I mean, there are sometimes where I wouldn't say the details get obscured, but they're just clearer to see when it's large. And in that same way, sometimes my mistakes get obscure. You know, I cover them up in the coloring. And this way you get to see that, you know, I make mistakes. They're not perfect. These things have
Peterson,
lots of flaws. David
Peterson, not perfect. You're hearing it here first. That's great. And so have they done this with each of the volumes thus far?
So far, Fall and Winter.
Fall and Winter.
And any time that I do some kind of a weather effect when I'm doing the production on the book,
right,
I'll take a sheet of paper and I'll lay it over my page. And on a light box so I can kind of, like, see through.
Right.
That's where I draw in, like, the rain or the snow. And that way I can also control it. So if it's rain, I can make sure the rain is kind of coming down the contour of the face. It's going down the right contours of a mouse's head or splattering on the top of their head. So I have to be able to see the original art to do that. But I need to be able to isolate those raindrops or snow or whatever it is.
Right.
So we reproduce those in vellum.
Okay.
In the books, so
you really are getting the whole effect of your process.
Yeah, it really is like getting to be in my studio and hold the originals.
That's amazing.
The winter book, so Fall had about, I want to say, 20 tip-in plates.
Wow.
Winter had 66.
Wow.
Because there's a lot of snow
in
that
book.
A lot of snow. Yeah.
Sure.
And that ended up being a huge production challenge, and it took a while for Arkea and the printer and I to all kind of figure out how to do it and meet the challenge and get it so the binding would stay together, keep the price point where we needed it so that folks could still afford to buy this thing.
Right.
And so that came out, I think, just before Christmas last year.
Right.
So it's only been out for a little while. And provided that sales go well, I'm totally open to doing a black and white version of my most recent book, The Black Axe.
Now, do you keep all of your original artwork? You don't sell it?
No,
or?
I do sell it.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I mean, I go through and I cherry pick pages that were special to me,
right,
or moments that I just can't give up. But the vast majority of the pages I make available.
So you must have some sort of physical record when you go to make these additional books?
I have high-res scans.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Yeah. And now, tell me, Dave, as we're wrapping up here, what can we look forward to now? What's coming up? What are you doing and working on?
I'm taking a little bit of a mouse break. I am done with my part of the second Legends of the Guard volume that comes out next month.
Right.
I finished up Black Axe a little while ago, so.
Well, that's amazing. I'll have to speak to somebody at Arkea about why you get a break.
Please don't. Please let me take my break. I was actually supposed to get a break between Winter and Black Axe. And I think while the fans saw a break in publishing, on my end, there wasn't really a break. There,
right.
There were other things going on. There was role-playing game stuff going on. There had been some movement on a movie at that point, which is
right.
All fallen through now, but there were things like that. There was Free Comic Book Day stories. There was conventions. There was all kinds of stuff where
right.
I still haven't gotten a break. And so when I started Black Axe, I was a little... I don't want to say burned out, but I was a little tired.
Right.
And thought, well, I'll just kind of power through Black Axe. And Black Axe took a heck of a long time to get done because I felt like I was in fifth gear going uphill.
There you go.
And so now I am going to take that break.
Right.
I'm actually going to work on something that's not Mouse Guard for a little while. I've got.
Whoa.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my.
That was earth-shattering announcement, I guess.
Live at Comic-Con.
I'm not ready to really talk about what it is other than it's going to be like a 48-page, rather slim,
okay.
little original graphic novel.
Sure.
At least that's the plan. I haven't started on it yet.
Right.
But that's the plan. So after I do that and get a couple other little things off my plate, I'm going to come back full force to Mouse Guard.
Nice.
With the next volume being The Weasel War of 1149.
There you go.
Which is a historic moment that I've referenced in several of the books.
I'm
going to tell that story.
That's excellent. And David, is there some place people can go to check you out, your work, and so forth, a website?
Mouseguard.net is a good hub for how to find me, how to find pages for sale,
books
that are released.
So stalkers take notes, Mouseguard.net.
Mouseguard.net. And then I tweet quite a bit, and I'm at Mouseguard.
There you go. David Peterson from Mouseguard, thanks so much for spending time.
Thank you, Kev.